Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse House in your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Christmas is a great way to wind up the year, don't you think? And to wind up for your first pitch into the new year. I'm particularly blessed to have my mother with us this Christmas, and I know you're enjoying family and friends as you wind up 2015. Lighthouse is providing a Christmas service this coming Sunday at 10:45 a.m. and 6 p.m. I hope you'll join us. Hot apple cider, some special Christmas candies, warm hospitality, wonderful Christmas music, Christmas cheer, and a great Christmas message. So come on out this Sunday. I thought about taking a break and offering an encore of one of our most listened to shows. Perhaps the one that generated 6,000 feed hits in one day a few months ago. But I thought it best to take something of a break from the drama and rest in our hope of the coming Prince of Peace. I considered inviting new Iowa frontrunner Ted Cruz to take my show. Or perhaps our friend Huckabee or Carson. Trump's ticked off with me because I said I don't trust his conservative creds. Anyway, I decided instead to invite Ronald Reagan to take most of my show today. Many in my audience remember the Gipper as president, but my younger audience only knows him by name and reputation, probably. Even so, I have found that many of our younger conservatives are inspired by his optimism and obvious love for America evinced in his speeches, even if they don't quite understand the historical context in which they were given. Well, let's revisit some memories of Christmas with President Ronald Reagan. And here is his first Christmas message, delivered December 24, 1981, from the White House. Enjoy.
Good evening. At Christmas time, every home takes on a special beauty, a special warmth. And that's certainly true of the White House, where so many famous Americans have spent their Christmases over the years. This fine old home, the People's House, has seen so much, been so much a part of all our lives and history. It's been humbling and inspiring for Nancy and me to be spending our first Christmas in this place. We've lived here as your tenants for almost a year now. And what a year it's been. As a people, we've been through quite a lot. Moments of joy, tragedy, and of real achievement. Moments that I believe have brought us all closer together. G.K. Chesterton once said that the world would never starve for wonders, but only for the want of wonder. At this special time of year, we all renew our sense of wonder in recalling the story of the first Christmas in Bethlehem nearly 2,000 years ago. Some celebrate Christmas as the birthday of a great and good philosopher and teacher. Others of us believe in the divinity of the child born in Bethlehem, that he was and is the promised Prince of Peace. Yes, we've questioned why he who could perform miracles chose to come among us as a helpless babe. But maybe that was his first miracle, his first great lesson, that we should learn to care for one another. Tonight, in millions of American homes, the glow of the Christmas tree is a reflection of the love Jesus taught us. Like the shepherds and wise men of that first Christmas, we Americans have always tried to follow a higher light, a star, if you will. At lonely campfire vigils along the frontier, in the darkest days of the Great Depression, through war and peace, the twin beacons of faith and freedom have brightened the American sky. At times, our footsteps may have faltered, but trusting in God's help, we've never lost our way. Just across the way from the White House stand the two great emblems of the holiday season. A menorah symbolizing the Jewish festival of Hanukkah and the national Christmas tree. A beautiful towering blue spruce from Pennsylvania. Like the national Christmas tree, our country is a living, growing thing planted in rich American soil. Only our devoted care can bring it to full flower. Even as we rejoice, however, let us remember that for some Americans, this will not be as happy a Christmas as it should be. I know a little of what they feel. I remember one Christmas Eve during the Great Depression, my father opening what he thought was a Christmas greeting. It was a notice that he no longer had a job. Over the past year, we've begun the long, hard work of economic recovery. Our goal is an America in which every citizen who needs and wants a job can get a job. Our program for recovery has only been in place for 12 weeks now, but it is beginning to work. With your help and prayers, it will succeed. We're winning the battle against inflation, runaway government spending, and taxation. And that victory will mean more economic growth, more jobs, and more opportunity for all Americans. A few months before he took up residence in this house, one of my predecessors, John Kennedy, tried to sum up the temper of the times with a quote from an author closely tied to Christmas, Charles Dickens. We were living, he said, in the best of times and the worst of times. Well, in some ways, that's even more true today. The world is full of peril as well as promise. Too many of its people, even now, live in the shadow of want and tyranny.
And then the president went on to outline his policies regarding the oppressors in Poland. He chastised Brezhnev by name, then leader of the Soviet Empire, and blamed what he had once called the evil empire for their interference in Poland and their part in instigating and supporting the oppressors there. He warned them that the free world would not stand by and do nothing. And then he continued.
Yesterday, I met in this very room with Romuald Spasowski, the distinguished former Polish ambassador who has sought asylum in our country in protest to the suppression of his native land. He told me that one of the ways the Polish people have demonstrated their solidarity in the face of martial law is by placing lighted candles in their windows to show that the light of liberty still glows in their hearts. Ambassador Spasowski requested that on Christmas Eve, a lighted candle will burn in the White House window as a small but certain beacon of our solidarity with the Polish people. I urge all of you to do the same tomorrow night on Christmas Eve. As a personal statement of your commitment to the steps we are taking to support the brave people of Poland in their time of troubles. Once, earlier in this century, an evil influence threatened that the lights were going out all over the world. Let the light of millions of candles in American homes give notice that the light of freedom is not going to be extinguished. We are blessed with a freedom and abundance denied to so many. Let those candles remind us that these blessings bring with them a solemn obligation. An obligation to the God who guides us, an obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers, and an obligation to the children of the world, whose future will be shaped by the way we live our lives today. Christmas means so much because of one special child, but Christmas also reminds us that all children are special, that they are gifts from God, gifts beyond price that mean more than any presents money can buy. In their love and laughter, in our hopes for their future, lies the true meaning of Christmas. So, in a spirit of gratitude for what we've been able to achieve together over the past year, and looking forward to all that we hope to achieve together in the years ahead, Nancy and I want to wish you all the best of holiday seasons. As Charles Dickens, whom I quoted a few moments ago, said so well in A Christmas Carol, God bless us, everyone. Good night.
Next. The Reagan recovery was in full steam, and things were going very well. Hope in America's future was restored. He had the libs on the ropes as he reined in bureaucratic oppression, read communism here at home, and checked communist aggression abroad until we came to another Christmas and another Christmas radio speech. This one delivered by radio from the White House on December 25th in 1982. But before we go into this one, I would like to explain that the Vietnam refugees were not piling their families into those little leaky boats and setting off in hopes an American ship would find them before some communist one did, and rescue them from the sea and then carry them to freedom here in America in order to infiltrate America and commit acts of terrorism. In fact, the North Vietnamese had nothing at all to gain by committing acts of atrocity here. They knew that would only result in America coming back, and that's something they didn't want. And besides, they were a different kind of enemy, brutal and wicked and evil in their own way, but not like these crazy terrorists we're getting now. Of course, there was concern some spies might get into the country embedded among the refugees fleeing oppression there, so vetting was certainly necessary and important. But anyway, you'll see, and you'll probably notice, that lump the Gipper talks about welling up somewhere between your Adam's apple and belly button, too. Listen up. Christmas with Ronald Reagan, December 25, 1982, from the White House.
Merry Christmas from the White House. Nancy and I wish we could personally thank the thousands of you who sent us holiday cards, greetings, and messages. Each one is moving and tells a story of its own. A story of love, hope, prayer, and patriotism. And each one has helped to brighten our Christmas. Some of the most moving have come from fellow citizens who, unlike most of us, are not spending Christmas Day at the family hearth, surrounded by friends and loved ones. One of my favorite pieces of Christmas mail came early this year.
A sort of modern American Christmas story that took place not in our country's heartland, but on the troubled waters of the South China Sea last October. To me, it sums up so much of what is best about the Christmas spirit, the American character, and what this beloved land of ours stands for, not only to ourselves, but to millions of less fortunate people around the globe. I want to thank Mr. Gary Kemp of Neenah, Wisconsin, for bringing it to my attention. It's a letter from Ordnance Man First Class John Mooney, written to his parents from aboard the aircraft carrier Midway on October 15th. But it's a true Christmas story in the best sense. Dear Mom and Dad, he wrote, today we spotted a boat in the water and we rendered assistance. We picked up 65 Vietnamese refugees. It was about a two-hour job getting everyone aboard, and then they had to get screened by intelligence and checked out by medical and fed, clothed, and all that. But now they're resting on the hangar deck, and the kids, most of them seem to be kids, are sitting in front of probably the first television set they've ever seen, watching Star Wars. Their boat was sinking as we came alongside. They'd been at sea 5 days and had run out of water. All in all, a couple of more days, and the kids would have been in pretty bad shape. I guess once in a while, he writes, we need a jolt like that for us to realize why we do what we do and how important really it can be. I mean, it took a lot of guts for those parents to make a choice like that, to go to sea in a leaky boat in hope of finding someone to take them from the sea. So much risk, but apparently they felt it was worth it rather than live in a communist country. For all of our problems with the price of gas and not being able to afford a new car or other creature comforts this year, I really don't see a lot of leaky boats heading out of San Diego looking for the Russian ships out there. After the refugees were brought aboard, I took some pictures, but as usual, I didn't have my camera with me for the real picture, the one blazed in my mind. As they approached the ship, they were all waving and trying as best they could to say, hello, America sailor. Hello, freedom man. It's hard to see a boat full of people like that and not get a lump somewhere between chin and belly button, and it really makes one proud and glad to be an American. People were waving and shouting and choking down lumps and trying not to let other brave men see their wet eyes. A lieutenant next to me said, yeah, I guess it's payday in more ways than one. We got paid today, and I guess no one could say it better than that. It reminds us all of what America has always been, a place a man or woman can come to for freedom. I know we're crowded and we have unemployment and we have a real burden with refugees, but I honestly hope and pray we can always find room. We have a unique society made up of cast-offs of all the world's wars and oppressions, and yet we're strong and free. We have one thing in common. No matter where our forefathers came from, we believe in that freedom. I hope we always have room for one more person, maybe an Afghan or a Pole or someone else looking for a place where he doesn't have to worry about his family starving or a knock on the door in the night, and where all men who truly seek freedom and honor and respect and dignity for themselves and their posterity can find a place where they can finally see their dreams come true and their kids educated and become the next generations of doctors and lawyers and builders and soldiers and sailors. Love, John. Well, I think that letter just about says it all. In spite of everything, we Americans are still uniquely blessed, not only by the rich bounty of our land, but by a bounty of the spirit, a kind of year-round Christmas spirit that still makes our country a beacon of hope in a troubled world, and that makes this Christmas and every Christmas even more special for all of us who number among our gifts the birthright of being an American. Until next week, thanks for listening. Merry Christmas. God bless you.
And thank you for listening. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back. We'll spend some more time with President Reagan's best Christmas radio address ever.
The Brain Massage Show ambassadors receive many special benefits, the greatest of which is the satisfaction of knowing they are part of a strong voice for truth and traditional American values. Bronze, silver, and gold ambassadors receive an audio CD of 4 Brain Massage shows each month. These are indexed so you can quickly navigate to the segment you want to hear again or show a friend. Silver and gold ambassadors also receive a copy of the transcript of the shows with supporting documentation. Gold ambassadors have the added privilege of being invited to join the Brain Masseurs Advisory Council. Interested? Call the Listener Response Hotline and ask about the Ambassador Program. An assistant will call you back to give you all the information you need. The number is 888-770-8000. That's 888-770-8000.
I have written melodies for several of the Psalms, and I'm gratified that so many have enjoyed singing them. We've produced a CD titled Singing Psalms. $10 covers the cost of the CD and includes a $3 donation to our ministry. Call 1-888-770-8000 to order yours today. Or go to www.santamarialighthouse.org and click on the bookstore button.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I'm particularly blessed to have my mother with us this Christmas. Come on by to the Lighthouse this Sunday and meet her. Lighthouse is providing a Christmas service this coming Sunday at 10:45 a.m. and 6 p.m. I hope you'll join us. Hot apple cider, some special Christmas music, candies, warm hospitality, and a great Christmas message. As I mentioned in the first segment, I thought about taking a break this week and offering an encore of one of our more popular shows. You know, we're hitting around 248,000 feed hits on our podcast site now, about 500 new feed hits every day. And then in addition to that, about 300 to 400 plays from our podcast site every week, not counting the number of those who come to our church website or who listen to the show via thebrainmassageshow.com or who listen to it on radio. So we praise the Lord for the outreach we have, but we want to expand that and we'll need some help to do it this year. I hope you'll become an ambassador, a bronze ambassador, or a silver ambassador, or a gold ambassador. Call 1-888-770-8000 and tell us you want to be a freedom man. And we'll get back to you and let you know what's involved in that. In the last segment, we spent a little Christmas time with President Ronald Reagan. He encouraged us to put a candlelight in our windows as a token of our solidarity with freedom-loving people in all oppressed countries, and inspired us with the story of the Vietnam refugees greeting a Navy ship hollering, "Hello, freedom man!" Now, I totally understand our concerns about the Syrian refugees and the flood of illegal immigrants crossing our borders. I believe the borders must be closed, those who are here illegally must be deported, and made to stand in line with those who are attempting to enter our country legally, and get in the back of that line, by the way. This idea of rewarding cheaters because they cheated for their family, what about those who are attempting to migrate into our country legally because they want a better life for their family? Anyway, I'm totally in favor of hitting the pause button on Syrian refugees. I mean, really, all Muslim refugees, especially in light of San Bernardino. Until we find some effective way to discover whether or not they are coming here to enjoy our freedoms with us, or they are coming here to take our freedoms from us. But I'm sure you agree there's something sad about how Mohammedan Muslims are strangling the goodness out of Americans. Like our friends in France, we've gone out of our way to accommodate Muslims to make certain the general population did not turn on all their Muslim neighbors and openly attack them or abuse them in any way at all, verbally or otherwise, because of the sins of their brother Muslims. And one way we've gone about to do this is to try to make clear a distinction between what we call the radical Muslim, and I guess that leaves the others to be referred to as the normal Muslims, as if the Muslim norm is the westernized version of Islam, you know, who have generally a pacific temper and embrace with their American neighbors the values of freedom and religion, speech, and expression that are deeply entrenched in our Western culture. Or at least they don't believe the best way to combat these ideas they find odious and to promote their own cherished ideas and values is to attack their neighbors with guns and bombs, okay? So they're content to engage in the free exchange of ideas and attempt to through persuasion, advance their cause, through debate and education, and to allow non-Muslims the same freedom to believe according to the dictates of their conscience and not to the dictates of Islam or Sharia law. But we wonder sometimes about the moderate Muslim. He seems to be so moderate, they won't even stand up against so-called radical Islam. We hear little from them after San Bernardino, for example. So I put together a show questioning the whole idea that the westernized version of Islam is the norm, challenging the idea that Muslims who are seduced into ISIS have been radicalized. Now, my approach was to say that these Muslims have been radicalized, all right, by the Quran. I showed last week that a literal understanding of the Quran, understood in the light of the example of its source, Muhammad, necessarily leads to what we call radical Islam. And then a dear friend and supporter of the Ray Massage Show, Pat Nickel, made a great point when he discovered that radicalization sounds like some kind of force greater than them overtakes them and, you know, makes them into something other than a true Muslim. When in fact, historically and exegetically, what we call the radicalized Muslim is really the norm, both in terms of sheer numbers, I mean, most Muslims in the world adhere to that radicalized version of Islam, and then according to the history of Islam itself, and according to the teaching of their holy book, the Quran. So anyway, he said we need another name for these Muslims who commit acts of terror in the name of jihad. They're not radicalized, as if victims of some mysterious force called radicalization. And so I suggested, how about traditional Islam versus modern Islam, or Mohammedan Muslims, as contrasted to westernized Muslims or modern Muslims? And we all agree there needs to be some way to differentiate the modernized Muslim from adherents to traditional Islam, modern Muslims from Mohammedan Muslims, let's say. You know, like the few new, brave imams that are calling for a sort of Protestant Reformation of Islam. But there is a problem, you know. Whereas the Protestant Reformation was an effort to reform the Catholic Church back to its roots in primitive forms found in the Book of Acts and the Epistles, for example, Islamic reformers are actually calling for a modernization of Islam. They are encouraging Muslims to contextualize those radicalizing verses in the Quran, like the ones I brought to your attention last week, and to see them as having force only in the historical context of Muhammad and being inapplicable to today, that is, out of context. Although, when they say that, they don't mean out of the context within the Quran, but out of context historically. Now, the danger some Muslims will see in this is that it essentially could relegate the Quran into irrelevance for modern times, but that is exactly what should happen. Anyway, they want to reinterpret the Quran within a modern world context. More power to them. I understand one of these imams actually nailed a petition on the door of some mosques, sort of like Luther did in Wittenberg, calling on the presiding imams in those mosques to come out and declare themselves against traditional Islamic notions of worldwide theocracy under Allah, and backing off their supersensitivity to blasphemy, and speaking out against such travesties as are routinely committed in the name of Allah all over the world. I understand he is not getting a favorable response, that some are coming out against him with intense hostility, tearing off the petition from their mosque door and angrily throwing it into the trash. Probably every one of these mosques should come under close scrutiny, but you see where this goes, don't you? I mean, in a manner similar to how the homosexual activist is destroying liberty in this country, Mohammedan Muslims are destroying our liberties as well, setting us up for a kind of religious persecution against all religions that the state deems suspect. Well, we have all been wondering, where is the outcry from the Muslim community over San Bernardino et al? So the recent rise of Islamic reformers is a welcome development. Perhaps some of these so-called moderate Muslims who have enjoyed living here, you know, where their crazy ISIS Muslim monster counterparts can't arbitrarily go all takfir on their fellow Muslims who sit at home while their brothers wage holy war on the infidel and then start chopping off their heads in our streets like they do over there. Now, don't get all HuffPost on me. I welcome to the fight for freedom that I see stirring among at least some of our more brave Muslim neighbors of late. It's just so late. I mean, did it take San Bernardino to give them the courage to start openly calling for reform in Islam? Are Muslims also beginning to fear jihad in the streets of their neighborhoods as their counterparts suffer over there? We sometimes wonder dumbfounded at anyone willingly participating in a religion that would beat an 8-year-old near to death because she came home one day and said she was a Christian. We wonder at these crazy people and their honor killings. You say, well, that's your cultural values. Well, we have ours. And I say, hey, anyone who accepts that behavior as culturally okay needs to get out of America yesterday. I wonder at anyone who is so blind they cannot see that any culture advocating the brutal murder of a daughter because she converted to some other religion simply because it embarrassed the family, what kind of weird, perverted thinking is that? My point is that Ronald Reagan was not fighting Mohammedan Muslims. We are. And I'm sure he would have taken as strong a stand against the evils of Mohammedan Muslims as he did against the evil empire, the former Soviet Union. But when I listen to him, I do miss those more innocent days and lament with considerable resentment the killing of America's goodness. In fact, liberals have been engaged in this for some time now. Their welfare state is killing generosity and pitting the American worker against the American loafer. Their advocacy for perversion is only deepening America's aversion to and resentment against them for imposing their perversity on us, even to the point of insisting we must allow our wives now, their privacy to be invaded by perverted men who imagine themselves to be a woman, to invade the privacy of our wives and daughters. How much more of this are we going to stand for? Their policies regarding immigration foment a rising tide of resentment against illegals. And it has general ramifications. It's bad news. And all around, liberal policies are killing the goodness of America. And maybe that's their strategy. Well, don't let it happen. We shall overcome. Anyway, allow me to conclude today by looking back once more, this time to President Reagan's 1983, December 25 radio address from the White House. This will startle some of you. Others will need to grab your hankies. Enjoy.
My fellow Americans, like so many of your homes, the White House is brimming with greens, colorful decorations, and a tree trimmed and ready for Christmas Day. And when Nancy and I look out from our upstairs windows, we can see the national Christmas tree standing in majestic beauty. Its lights fill the air with a spirit of love, hope, and joy from the heart of America. I shared that spirit recently when a young girl named Amy Benham helped me light our national tree. Amy had said that the tree that lights up our country must be seen all the way to heaven. And she said that her wish was to help me turn on its lights. Well, Amy's wish came true, but the greatest gift was mine, because I saw her eyes light up with hope and joy just as brightly as the lights on our national tree. And I'm sure they were both seen all the way to heaven, and they made the angels sing. Christmas is a time for children, and rightly so. We celebrate the birthday of the Prince of Peace, who came as a babe in a manger. Some celebrate Christmas as the birthday of a great teacher and philosopher, but to other millions of us, Jesus is much more. He is divine, living assurance that God so loved the world, he gave us his only begotten Son, so that by believing in him and learning to love each other, we could one day be together in paradise. It's been said that all the kings who ever reigned and all the parliaments that ever sat have not done as much to advance the cause of peace on earth and goodwill to men as the man from Galilee, Jesus of Nazareth. Christmas is also a time to remember the treasures of our own history. We remember one Christmas in particular, 1776, our first year as a nation. The Revolutionary War had been going badly, but George Washington's faith, courage, and leadership would turn the tide of history our way. On Christmas night, he led a band of ragged soldiers across the Delaware River through driving snow to a victory that saved the cause of independence. It's said that their route of march was stained by bloody footprints. Their spirit never faltered, and their will could not be crushed. The image of George Washington kneeling in prayer in the snow is one of the most famous in American history. He personified a people who knew it was not enough to depend on their own courage and goodness. They must also seek help from God, their Father and Preserver. In a few hours, families and friends across America will join together in caroling parties and Christmas Eve services. Together, we'll renew that spirit of faith, peace, and giving, which has always marked the character of our people. In our moments of quiet reflection, I know we will remember our fellow citizens who may be lonely and in need tonight. Is the Christmas spirit still alive, some ask? Well, you bet it is. Being Americans, we open our hearts to neighbors less fortunate. We try to protect them from hunger and cold, and we reach out in so many ways. From Toys for Tots drives across the country, to Goodwill by the Salvation Army, to American Red Cross efforts which provide food, shelter, and Christmas cheer from Atlanta to Seattle. Churches are so generous it's impossible to keep track. Let us remember the families who maintain a watch for their missing in action. And yes, let us remember all those who were persecuted inside the Soviet bloc, not because they commit a crime, but because they love God in their hearts and want the freedom to celebrate Hanukkah or worship the Christ child. And because faith for us is not an empty word, we invoke the power of prayer to spread the spirit of peace. We ask protection for our soldiers who are guarding peace tonight, from frigid outposts in Alaska and the Korean demilitarized zone to the shores of Lebanon. One Lebanese mother told us that her little girl had only attended school 2 of the last 8 years. Now, she said, because of our presence there, her daughter can live a normal life. With patience and firmness, we can help bring peace to that strife-torn region and make our own lives more secure. The Christmas spirit of peace, hope, and love is a spirit Americans carry with them all year round, everywhere we go. As long as we do, we need never be afraid, because trusting in God is the one sure answer to all the problems we face. Till next week, thanks for listening. God bless you, and Merry Christmas.
I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. If nothing else, just call in and say Merry Christmas and hang up. If you want to write me an email, go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com and send me an email. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.